This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 9:09 into the 10 o'clock hour we go, and we're going to talk about vouchers and the Gator program, and I'll start with my piece first while we get our guest, hopefully. And I don't know. Here's my issue. And look, I had a kid that went through private school and paid tuition all the way through Ursuline and then Mount Carmel, and it wasn't cheap. But we sacrificed and did what we had to do. My issue with vouchers is it seems as though by supply and demand, the only thing that it does is props up failing private schools. Now, the governor introduced his Gator program at Rummel. I don't know if Rummel accepts voucher students or not, and I don't know exactly how the Gator program is going to work, but if you're subsidizing parents that are already paying private tuition, then I don't know that that's going to do anything to really help the public education system in the state other than take dollars from that. I think that the way it plays out, the schools that accept voucher students, for the most part, the private schools, are not those that are doing very well. And while it gives a parent a chance to take a child out of public school and put them in a private school, it props up the private school that by market demand in the marketplace would not have been there anyway, but for the voucher dollars, if you understand what I'm saying. So the schools that are doing well are packed with students. They don't take voucher students. The schools, the private schools that are not doing well, take voucher students. But then what happens from that point? Does the quality of education for the child go up any? We're going to spend an hour talking about it. Douglas Harris joins us, professor and chair of Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. Good morning, Douglas. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. I don't know if you could hear any of this or not, but what I was saying is it just seems from a supply and demand marketplace standpoint, the private schools that are doing well in educating the students, they don't need voucher students because they turn people away every year. Conversely, I think vouchers serve in some ways to prop up failing private schools while not increasing the quality of education any and punishing the public school system overall. Am I anywhere close to right on any of that?
Yeah, no, I think the first part is definitely right on, that the vouchers are not going to have much effect, at least on the number of students in the higher performing schools, those that are in high demand. Although it is, especially with the new program, it is going to start sending money to those families. So if the families that are already in private schools or would have attended private schools anyway will end up getting the voucher under the new program that's being put in place.
That's the Gator program. So let's talk right about that. Then we're going to work all over the place here, Douglas, if you can stay with me, if you can bear with me, rather. So the Gator program is going to people that have kids in Jesuit and Sacred Heart, I'm just going to pick two schools at random, they will be eligible to get subsidies for their tuition?
That's what it looks like it will eventually be. So it's a little bit murky because the program is supposed to be phased in three different tiers, and that depends on what the legislature does. It depends on what the state board does. But you know, the goal of the program from the standpoint of the advocates is to make it universally acceptable and accessible to all families, regardless of income, regardless of any other characteristics, the age of the students or anything like that, and to be usable at any religious schools or any other kinds of private schools.
So I'm not picking on Sacred Heart or Jesuit. I just mentioned those because I think those are two of the more popular private schools for boys and girls in the city. But, and again, you said murky, so I don't want to get too lost in the details of the Gator program. But tell me about who accepts voucher students now and who doesn't, or who gets any type. Let me check that. Let me go back and go to the inception of this. In Louisiana, the history of vouchers started for parents who didn't want to send their kids to integrated public schools. Is that the truth or not?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was true throughout the South. That it was an idea that became popular briefly right after Brown v. Board of Education and the desegregation movement. It was initially a way of sidestepping desegregation.
So then take me through the history of vouchers after that.
Well, not much happened because it was so transparently obvious what they were doing, and it was not legal to try to sidestep what the court was saying at that point, that the idea pretty much died for decades until really the early 2000s, when you started to see another Supreme Court decision that opened the door for vouchers. There's always been a separation of church and state element to this debate because of sending government funds to private schools and religious schools. And so the Supreme Court changed its mind, basically, in a Cleveland voucher case in the early 2000s, and that opened the door, legally speaking, and then you started to see some states, especially Florida, institute some small-scale statewide voucher programs, and there's some small city-based programs as well. And then, but those were small. They were targeted usually to students with disabilities or just students in low-performing schools. You know, Louisiana also came into this in the 2010s with the Louisiana Scholarship Program, and but it's really only very recently, just in the last 4 years or so, that we've had these universal voucher programs where, you know, the intent is that everybody will be eligible for them and that all schools will be eligible to receive them.
Let me quote from Patrick Wall's story here from The Advocate, if I may. Parents and kids should not be trapped in a failing school, then Governor Bobby Jindal said, adding that all children deserve an excellent education. One of several Republican-led states to adopt vouchers, Louisiana targeted its program to families with incomes at or below 250% of the poverty line, with children in public schools rated C or lower. Then they had to administer. Anyway, tell me, I don't want to read the whole story here because I want you to talk, but tell me what happened after Governor Jindal.
Well, that was when the Louisiana Scholarship Program started. That's one that you're describing. And,
right.
And that was an interesting one in a couple different dimensions. One is that they required that the students would take the same test as in the public schools, the LEAP test. And the other is that a lot of the students ended up being essentially going in through a lottery. So they were randomly assigned to receive the voucher. And so from an evaluation standpoint, if you want to understand how a program works, it's a great situation where you have an outcome. You can compare the students in private schools to the students in public schools, and you know that they're randomly assigned so that there's no difference between them other than, you know, what shows up in their outcomes and the fact that they attended different schools. And what we learned was that the results were really poor, that students did actually a lot worse. The ones that were randomly assigned to receive the voucher and go to a private school did a lot worse academically than the students who remained behind in public schools.
And would that indicate what we started with, that they were using the vouchers to go to an already failing school, but it was a private school, not a public school?
Exactly, that's right. So I think, as you said a few minutes ago, that the schools that you might have wanted or hoped that students would go to, the higher performing private schools, at least what we think of. We can't really measure the performance of private schools, so that's important here. But the ones that people would typically think of, the ones you mentioned, Jesuit and Sacred Heart and so on, those were not the schools that these students were going to. And you know, there are high-performing public schools, low-performing public schools. There are also high-performing private schools and low-performing private schools. And the system is designed to really send the students receiving vouchers to lower-performing schools.
Let's talk about who accepts vouchers, or once a school, a private school, accepts, can they accept one voucher student, two voucher students? Do they have to accept a percentage? How does that work, Doug?
I don't think there was a limit. I think the schools could set their own limits in terms of, you know, they might only have a certain amount of capacity, so they could say, well, accept this number of students. And then if more students apply, that's when the lottery would kick in and they would have to randomly assign students to the different schools. So it really wasn't a limit from an individual school standpoint in terms of who participated.
So if I have St. Tommy's School for Kids, okay, and I decide to accept voucher students, I can choose how many I want to accept, and am I getting the full $10,000 a year tuition, and the parent gets a portion of that, and then they have to make up the difference? How does that work?
Well, the current program, the Louisiana Scholarship, is a fixed amount that the state sends to the school, and then that has to cover full tuition, so the school has to accept that as full payment. The Gators program is going to work differently in that that they're going to give the schools a fixed amount, but the schools will be able to top that off with additional tuition. So that'll affect then who can really effectively use the money. So if you're a low-income family, even if you only need to find $1,000 and the scholarship's going to pick up the rest, you still might not be able to find $1,000 to pay the extra tuition to make that work. So
as it stands now, if I'm running St. Tommy's School, that is a business, right? And I do have debt service, and I got to keep the doors open. If I accept a voucher student, I'm not going to get the full tuition that I would get if I have a waiting list of students that want to pay full tuition. Accurate?
Well, it depends on what the tuition level is. Actually, a lot of schools have tuition that's lower than the voucher amount or close enough that they might not really be sacrificing anything in that respect. So it depends on the tuition level. So again, what you think about the Jesuits and Sacred Hearts of the world, it's not going to cover full tuition there. And so they would the schools would have to change their policies to accommodate this, or again, you might end up with some families who want to go there and can use the voucher but still can't afford the rest of the tuition.
So what is your research on school vouchers found, and are they working in Louisiana?
No, they're not working by the usual academic measures. So again, the test scores I described earlier, things got worse. Yeah, students did worse than if they had stayed behind in public schools. And there was no improvement in, say, college going. So the things that we typically look at and that we can measure, things got worse. And that was also true in other states that tried this, Ohio, Indiana. Florida is a little bit of an exception. That's the only state where they've seen any positive effects on college going, but no state has shown any positive effects on test scores. In fact, they all show either no effect on test scores or reductions in achievement.
When you say test scores, the metrics that are used, are they the same for public and private schools, or are they different?
In Louisiana, it's the same. In I think there was one other state where it was the same. In Florida, it's a different test. And actually, with the Gator program that's coming up, it will be a different test. And so, in that respect, we may never know actually how the Gator program is working, because we won't have any way to compare the students who are in that program with those who are in public schools.
So it would be murkier almost?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, really, we may never know whether the program works or not in that respect.
So what is the metric now? They both private and public schools, is it the LEAP test? What do they take?
Correct. That's right.
But when the Gator program kicks in, the private schools will not be taking the LEAP test? Or take me through that.
Correct. Well, it's only the students using the vouchers anyway. So right now it's not all students in private schools taking the leap. It's only those who are receiving the voucher. And then with the Gator scholarship, the students will, again, have to take some sort of a test, but the schools and students will be able to pick the test. So that means it's not going to be comparable in any way to the public schools.
Let me take a break. We'll digest what we've heard so far, pick it up when we come back. We're going to talk to Erin Bendeley in the second half of the hour. She's Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute. She is strongly pro-voucher, and we'll see what she has to say when we come back after the bottom of the hour. But we have more with Douglas Harris when we return, professor and chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. It seems like we're just laundering money to subsidize parents that want to send their kids to private school. And look, I did it. I made the sacrifice. I didn't drive a brand new car, but the kid got the education that I wanted the kid to have. And I don't.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I don't know how this is going to change anything, but hurt public schools. We'll see when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. All right, 9:30. We're going to talk to Erin Bendeley in a couple of minutes, give her as much time as we can to talk about the voucher program and the Gator program. Douglas Harris, our guest, professor, chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. Students achieving mastery on state tests, 32% of all public school students, 24% of low-income public school students, 14% of voucher students in private schools. So Governor Landry tweeting that with President Trump, we'll continue working towards education freedom for all. President Trump wants subsidies, private school subsidies, all families, regardless of financial need. When it comes to the new Gator program, when it comes to students receiving vouchers, is there any way, in your opinion, Douglas, that you can see this working, or is it a fatally flawed program?
Well, if the goal is to raise achievement and to increase the usual measures that we look at, then I don't really see a way that this is going to work. I mean, the evidence is pretty clear, and it's clear across states. You know, there are other ways to look at this. You know, the charter schools have been effective in New Orleans, and having some sort of accountability for the program. They're actually reducing the accountability. I mentioned earlier that students aren't going to be taking the same test, so it won't be possible to compare to public schools or really to release any meaningful information to parents to help them make decisions. You know, there's one other element that I know it's going to come up later in your show with the next speaker, which is, you know, the idea that the program it may say is overregulated, the existing one where the results are really poor. That's why the program didn't work. That's the allegation. But there's also no evidence for that either. You know, the problem, it goes back to what you said at the beginning of the show, which is that the schools that you might want the students to move into are very unlikely to accept more students. And that's why schools are not participating. It's not because the program was overregulated. And the way in which it is overregulated, and one thing that schools I think are concerned about, private schools, is that the program doesn't let them pick their own students, right? So private schools have selective admissions, and especially, you know, the more elite, more expensive schools are not letting in all students. Like they're selecting, just as like colleges will select the students that they prefer. And so that's the regulation that they're talking about. That's what they don't want. They want to be able to pick their students. And I think when you think about the public aims.
Go back again on that. Because let me tell you this. When my kid went to school, they had took a test. They had an interview process then and decided whether or not to let the kid in the school, right? So is that what they call? Tell me how that relates to regulation.
Well, what the advocates for the voucher program are saying is that the private schools should be able to continue to do that. That's a standard practice in most private schools is to be able to select students in the way you just described. And with this new program, they're still going to be able to do that. So you might have a voucher and you might even be able to pay the full amount, even if they charge tuition at a given school, but the school might not let you in. They're not required to let students in.
So then common sense would tell you that the student is going to, and the parents are going to take the voucher money or the Gator money and go to, as we began this interview, with the failing private school already, right? The school is already failed.
Right. And then that's the sense in which the regulation is not the problem. It's just the design of the program is what's going to make that problem happen. And even if, even setting aside that, the idea that the program is overregulated or highly regulated is misleading, because it really only two rules that matter here. One is the idea that the schools can still, in the old program, couldn't select. So in the old program, even where and the results were really bad there too, they also couldn't select their program. Under the Gator program, they will be able to select. That's one of the things that's changing that I think people don't really realize is that that restriction is there, and not everybody's going to get the school that they want. And the other regulation is even having to take the public school test at all. Like, that's considered to be onerous, but it seems pretty basic for an organization receiving public funds.
I have to go here because I want to give Aaron as much time as I can. Real quick, Douglas, is there a scenario under which you see a voucher program working successfully?
If the goal is to improve achievement, no, I don't see a way that there are other goals that you might have, supporting religion and religious organizations and so on, but it's hard to see from an academic achievement standpoint how this would be helpful.
Thank you, Douglas. Appreciate your time. Professor Chair at Tulane's Department of Economics and Director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. I hope Erin Bendeley was listening, because we're going to talk to her. We come back, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute, who are very much in favor of vouchers, and the Gator program, 9:35, 25 till 10, traffic now, WWL. You feed a lot of hungry people, and they need volunteers to help at the food pantries on either the East or West Bank. If you can help, go to givinghopenola.org. Hi, 9:40, 20 till 10, quickly to Erin Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute. Morning, Erin, how are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great, and you?
I hope you were listening just now, were you? Because you're going to save me a lot of time if you were.
Unfortunately, I was not.
Okay.
You're going to have to bring me up to speed.
Well, we're
so
talking
sorry.
To Douglas Harris, Professor and Chair of Tulane's Department of Economics, Director of the Education Research Alliance for New Orleans. He was talking about the Gator program and vouchers, how they failed miserably, and he thinks that, I'm trying to go to my notes here, that under regulation is not going to be the answer for people that have said that the program is overregulated. And a final question I asked him was, does he see in any way, shape, or form a voucher program working for the betterment? And I'll just give you a little background. I think that what's happened is it's propped up failing schools, or if the Gator program is going to be a subsidy for parents that are already paying private tuitions, well, what's that going to do to the public school system? And the other question I'll have, Erin, I'll throw at you, and then I'll turn the floor over to you, is, look, I paid private tuition, right, for Ursuline and Mount Carmel. So I get it, but I made a lot of sacrifices. At the same time, I was angry that I had to pay for a public school system that I chose not to use. So I get that part of it as well. Tell me why you think vouchers will work or do work or have worked.
Well, that was really helpful. Thank you for that. And I have followed Dr. Harris's work for a number of years and have a lot of respect for him. But I think we have to really start with the new Louisiana Gator program is not a voucher program. That's the first very important fact here. This is a very different kind of program.
Tell
and
me
we can
how.
Certainly go in. The main feature, well, a couple of things. With regard to how you can use your Gator scholarship, let's start there. What others called the old voucher program, scholarship program, really only gave families one single choice, and that is to take that amount of state money and use it for basically all or nothing. You had to enroll your child full time in a private school. The Gator program and what you may call education savings account programs throughout the country allows families to completely customize their child's education to meet their individual needs. Now, that could be enrollment, full-time enrollment in a private school, or it could be a totally customized home-based program where they purchase individual courses, they purchase tutoring, they contract with an educational service provider for career training or for dual enrollment, college prep, educational therapies, whatever that child may need. So this is a completely different program in terms of how families can actually use it to personalize their kids' education. There are also very different aspects of this type of program with regard to participating schools and providers. One of the things that we've learned a lot of lessons about over the years, and what the research shows, is that in an attempt to unfortunately do what we have done in the public education system, when we try to control quality through loads of regulation, bureaucracy, and red tape, we inadvertently limit the number of high-quality choices available to students and kids, particularly disadvantaged students, because we know that when we regulate a program to death and we try to turn private schools into public schools, it's no surprise that a lot of those schools and providers say, you know what, we're out. We're not participating. So these ESA programs do a much better job of respecting the independence and autonomy, and frankly, what has made private education attractive to families for generations. It allows them to do that with less government interference, and really, they are accountable to the person who matters most, and the person who knows their kid better than anyone else, and that's the parents.
All right, let me go to my example, right? So my kid went to Ursuline, went to Mount Carmel, and they had a test was given, and there was an interview, and then there was a selection process based on a lot of, kind of like college, I guess, in a way, and then you were either accepted or you weren't. With this Gator program, the schools will still have the same choice in doing that, right?
It's true that schools are not going to be required to change their student handbook, to change their policies and procedures just because they're participating in this program. And I think that's important for a number of ways. Again, I just said it. This is what has made these schools successful, if you will, for generations. It's the reason why families are opting to put their child in these schools instead of public schools or other schools. And I think it's important for families to be aware of the type of school culture that exists if they're going to put this child in that school for most of the day, to know what the expectations are, to know what the culture is, and frankly, to know what their expectations are as parents to support the child's learning and behavior. Some misinformation that's out there that I hear a lot recently is, oh, well, private schools are just going to cream students, or they're only going to take certain students, and a lot of disadvantaged students are not going to be allowed in. I just don't think the evidence is there to support that. I've seen plenty of private schools throughout the years.
Hang on a second. Let me just jump in for a second. As a parent, why would the private school take on any new students or any disadvantaged students when you know they're going to be getting pushback from parents whose children have already been accepted by afraid that, and I'm just going to say it, that the disadvantaged student's going to bring the rest of the class down? And how does this not just turn into the Gator program with parents get the schools, let me try to get this out, schools still accept the students that they would have already taken. The only difference is the parents are getting a help with the tuition from the state, and nothing really changes as far as the disadvantaged students, and they wind up being funneled into the so-called failing private schools already, other than a home education. Take me through that.
Well, I'm certainly not saying that 100% of every application is that all applications are going to be granted. That's not the case today, and that's certainly not a government requirement of this program going forward. But what we do know is that many, I would say most of the private schools across our state have a mission. Many of them are connected to churches or faith-based institutions, or just have a reputation and a long history of accepting a pretty diverse student body, accepting students that have special needs, accepting students that are academically behind, and that is part of their mission and why they exist. And why families and communities have supported them throughout the years to be able to ensure that they serve as many families as possible. There are plenty of private schools across our state that regularly fundraise for the purpose of being able to admit low-income disadvantaged students. I think we have to recognize that fact, and there's pretty overwhelming evidence to support that.
I think sometimes that can be done. I hate to use the word token, but I think sometimes that's done to be made to look as though they are looking for diversity. But I do know that when it comes to selling points for a lot of private schools, they like to talk about scholarships that were received. They like to talk about national merit scholars. So they're very selective about who they let in, with an eye toward the back end and attracting new students. And you're saying that this is not going to have any effect on any of that at all, that the institution will be more than willing to take in disadvantaged students, even though there may not be as many merit scholars, there may not be as many scholarships handed out, et cetera, because I don't see that happening.
Again, we know the free market works. We know that good, healthy competition, even in the educational system, works.
But wait, hang on. I'm not trying to argue, Aaron, but as far as the free market goes, since you said that, it seems to me the free market is working, in that the schools that are performing well, they don't need any vouchers or students, or they don't need any subsidies for the tuition because they're full. The schools that are not doing well free market-wise are the private schools that are not doing so well, and it seems as though those are the ones that are being propped up, and the data kind of indicates that, doesn't it?
Well, what we've heard directly from schools is that where they feel like they can continue doing what they have done, again, for generations, that families have found valuable to their children, and where the state does not basically force them to conform to the way that we have set up public education across our state, that's when you see schools participate in programs like this, where they know they're going to be able to continue to teach according to their own academic standards, their own curriculum, have expectations for behavior, et cetera. Again, we have to be very careful and essentially using an innovative program like this to force private schools, independent, autonomous schools that are not run by the government, to essentially try to force them into a public school model, which I think we can all admit has had its own significant struggles throughout the years. We've seen that.
Right, and along those lines.
By evidence, by families leaving the public school system in droves. And we're trying to address that through a number of issues on the public side. But we have to make sure that, again, this is a program to put families in the driver's seat, and to make sure that they're choosing something that will work for their child.
Tell me, how do you determine if this is a success or not years from now?
I think we look to see if there's a good, healthy participation in the program, both by families across the state and by schools and providers. I think we also need to look at parent satisfaction, and unfortunately that was not something that was covered in the article that ran this past weekend. 94% of families surveyed this past year indicated that they were happy with their choice of a school for their child, and that they were satisfied with their child's academic progress. And we know that there's a lot that goes into that, not only test scores, but also, do kids feel safe? Do they feel like they have the support that they need at school? Are their individual needs or disabilities being met? What really matters is it working for that child and their family?
Aaron, thank you. You can come back anytime you want, because this is not going to go away. We'll continue to talk about it. Aaron Bendeley, Vice President for Policy and Strategy at the Pelican Institute, 952, 8 till 10. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.